If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Hidden Killers Live with Tony Bruschi, Stacey Cole, and Todd Michaels.
Let's talk about Donald Adelson, our good friends over there, digging into what happens next for Donna, convicted in September for orchestrating the murder for hire of her former son-in-law, Dan Markell. Her motion for a new trial denied. Her defense team now preparing for an appeal. But what are the actual odds of overturning a life sentence in a case this public, this emotional, and this tied to the family? And what about the ripple effects? Harvey's courtroom outburst, Wendy's uncharged status, and Charlie's own pending appeal? Eric Faddis, former prosecutor, defense attorney, here with us to help unpack what is going on with the Adelsons and what may be next. We know Donna's not happy. She claims,
I swear, all my life I had nothing to do with this.
You got me, assholes. But she claims that they're going to try and appeal. What sort of grounds do you think they have going forward, Eric?
You know, I think the appellate grounds are going to likely mirror some of the grounds that they asserted to try to get a new trial. And so, you know, chiefly we're looking at judicial bias. They're saying that the judge was not impartial, that he was favoring the side of the prosecution. They list some colorable reasons for that. And then also sufficiency of evidence. Hey, the jury got it wrong and they just didn't have, there's actually not enough evidence here. And then lastly, the ground that might be most significant is the potential juror misconduct. That one sort of sticks out to me, but I think generally speaking, though, that's going to be the thrust of the appeal on those sort of three prongs there.
All right.
Well, just one quick question for Eric. How often do we end up with jury misconduct? Because I feel like the cases that we've been talking about recently, there's a lot of that discussion. Does it happen often, or is this just kind of a rare occurrence and we just keep landing on it?
It comes up way more than you think, Stacey. You know, and like we've talked about, jurors are, they're not professional jurors. They're, you know, Sam the butcher, and they're, you know, yeah, Marjorie the accountant. And they get these legal rules from the judge. Hey, you can't do this. You can do this. But especially in a long trial, it's hard to be perfect about those things, especially when you have no experience being a juror. And so you'd be surprised how much sort of jurors deviating from court orders comes up in high stakes criminal cases.
Is it just come up because it's just one of those boxes, like, okay, we have to appeal this, and let's check the box, because whether or not there's anything or not that's there, like, we can try and make something sound like maybe it's juror misconduct even when it's not. I mean, is there a way when you're examining that of going, well, this is clearly juror misconduct, or we can frame this as juror misconduct?
You know, I think you've got to be mindful of a trend that has been occurring in the law, and that's that juror misconduct usually it gives you a higher likelihood of overturning a conviction than some other ground like sufficiency of the evidence. That ground almost, I don't know that I've ever seen that work in a homicide case on appeal. But the jury misconduct one, that can have traction and because the jurors are the ones making the ultimate guilt determination. And if they did something that constitutes misconduct, appellate courts look at that closely and they give it significant weight.
What specifically are they arguing here as jury misconduct in the Adelson case?
So my understanding, and I haven't read any appeal or anything like that, but that one of the jurors, I believe, disclosed that they were on the jury, and you're not supposed to tell anybody that you're on the case. Is that going to change the outcome at the end of the day? Probably not. But there was some other comments from one juror. I believe that they were on a podcast, if I'm not mistaken. Ooh. And they made some comments that suggested they may have considered something they shouldn't have considered or something along those lines. And so that's my understanding as to the basis.
And jurors are allowed to go and talk and if they want to. They don't have
to. But not during the trial, though, right?
Not during the trial, no. But after, they can go and share whatever they'd like to about their experience at being a juror. How often, are we seeing that as being more of a problem than it ever has been in the past? I mean, we are in a relatively new world where immediately after, now you have every podcast in the world that wants to get a juror on to talk about what their experience was like. It's not just like the major networks that are going after, a juror from a very high profile trial. There's a room for everybody. And even, people who may not be talking are probably getting 50,000 invites. Please come on. Please tell what's going on. Does that complicate your world in terms of the legal world? Once a case is settled, once it's done, you have to worry about the stupid things a juror may say on a podcast. And I'm not calling the juror stupid, but I'm saying they may misspeak. They may say things in a certain way that then the legalese world is going to look at and go, well, they said it like this, they must mean that. And then they'll fill in the blanks and say, well, because it was presented this way, that shows that they were doing something unscrupulous behind the scenes, or they were taking something into consideration that they shouldn't have in a certain way, when they're just reflecting on their experience. They're not attorneys. They're just telling things the way a lay person would. Has this created a whole new hunting ground, if you will, for appeals when it comes to defending a client?
Oh yeah, 100%. I used to tell folks kind of back in the day that, hey, I've done like 58 jury trials. And I went and talked with the jurors, so I know what was going on in their mind. I have the secret, sacred knowledge that no one has. And now with podcasts and social media, everybody's hearing from these jurors. And you're right, they're hearing from them in ways that can be relevant to appeals. And certainly a savvy defense attorney can look at a statement and say, it appears this juror was influenced by something they weren't allowed to consider. When, like you said, it might be an innocent statement, it might be a misstatement, it might be a misrecollection. They may have just stated something inartfully. But now you better believe all of those appellate attorneys are watching these true crime podcasts after the case is done. You saw the Diddy jurors. At least one of them went on a podcast. And so, it is fertile ground for appeals and access to jurors that is so expansive and to such a degree that we've never had.
Donna is 75, Harvey's 81. Appeals take a long time. Just in your professional opinion on the things that they're bringing to light right now, saying these are what we're going to be talking about, where do you think it goes?
I think it is such a high bar to get a conviction overturned on appeal. And I think that Donna's chances are very slim. It's going to take some time. It's going to take months, if not, depending on what happens during the appellate's process. It could take years. And like you said, Donna is no spring chicken. And we've seen folks actually pass during as their appeals were pending. And one thing that's sort of bizarre is that in most states, that means that the conviction is not final and that person is not labeled a murderer, even if a jury said they were.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah, if the appellate process has not been finalized, most states will categorize that as a non-conviction.
Wow. That's one of those things where it's like, you think the system works this way until you realize the system doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. And it's like, Jesus, wow, really? Let's talk about what actually took place in that courtroom the other day during the sentencing. You had Harvey, let's start with Harvey, gave his victim impact statement. And it was basically accosting the judge and accosting the jury and the Markell family, the surviving victims here in this case, of which his son and wife have now been convicted of conspiring to murder. And he had the nerve to go up, just the optics of this were insane, of going up there and insulting them and saying that they're lying about their access to their grandchildren, when we can actually look at the record and see what the reality is. And it is what it is. What the hell was that? I mean, what? I mean, I don't even know. There's a lot of angles I want to ask about this, but I just want to get your visceral human reaction first.
Oh, gosh. I mean, the audacity, right? He was pretty aggro in there. And, you know, no one was really off limits. Like you said, he's going after the judge. He's going after the victim's family. It's been determined that this is a victim now. You know, I'm sure he has a lot with which he wants to unburden himself with respect to this whole family saga, and I understand that. But you gotta read the room a little bit, and you gotta make sure also that you're not harming the chances of your family members as their cases continue to proceed.
It was like a petulant child where it's, you know, you're not going to get the toy. I want the toy. Well, we're not going to get the toy. Then they grab a toy and like chuck it across the store and then, you know, grab another custard, like a customer's cart, and then shove it, you know, down the way.
I feel like you've seen this before.
Now you're really not getting the toy.
Yeah.
You know, and it just kept going. And then Donna, you know, joins in the insanity, like, oh, I'm not getting the toy. Well, I'm going to show you. And at the end of the day, it's just chaos and they get carted away.
Eric, would you expect your attorney, if you were Donna, wouldn't you expect your attorney to read over those statements and maybe make some suggestions about not doing this?
Oh, gosh, of course. You know, anytime we're preparing for a sentencing hearing, you meet with the people you're going to have speak. You get a sense as to what they're going to say, especially if it's written down. You review the entire thing and you say, wait a second, you know, I realize you're upset, but this is going to rub somebody the wrong way. I would rephrase it. I would, omit certain parts or whatever. And I don't have any evidence that happened here, that attorney review.
I mean, it looked like they were proofreading in real time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they stopped them both. And then Jackie's like, going over the thing. Okay, you start from here now.
Yeah, right.
just read the last sentence, because that's the only thing that seems left.
Yeah, yeah, that's all he had left.
I don't know if that's all he had left. I think there might have been more. I'm wondering if she's just like, just pick up from here, because all of this is not something we're going to say out loud. That was kind of shocking. But at the end of the day, these are your clients. At the end of the day, I mean, are they, even if you're the attorney and you say, no, don't say this, don't say that, they still can kind of say whatever they want, can they not?
Oh, 100%. And that happens all the time. Thankfully, it hasn't really happened to me, but I've seen it happen.
Because you use shock collars on your clients. They say shit, it's like,
you know, I've got my measures I take. But yeah, you know, I've seen the sentencing hearings where the attorney makes this sort of eloquent, remorseful, moving expression on behalf of their client, and the client just says like, fuck you, just like loses their mind. And you cannot control it, and it was not controlled here.
What did you make of the moment where after the judge finally like shut them down and said, you know, the utter lack of remorse that you're showing right now being taken into consideration, and then the bubblegum attorneys decided to say, we're going to challenge that. You can't take that into consideration, the lack of remorse. at a sentencing. Isn't that just kind of like, I don't know, common sense?
Not only is it common sense, Tony, but it is usually a statutory sentencing factor, oftentimes that the judge has to consider. It's whether there has been an expression of remorse. And so, yeah, that's like the one of the number one things judges look for at that time, and some sort of legal objection to such consideration just seems unmeritorious and silly.
Well, why were they arguing? I mean, Jackie, as hard as it is to believe, was a judge, which, yeah, I mean, maybe that's hard to believe, maybe that's not, depending on your opinion of judges. But the fact that there was even brought, it seemed just like, it was like, again, it goes back to like children. It's like, if you have zero legal knowledge, you're going to throw that out there. You can't do that. That's against the rules. Like, do you not? Here's the rule sheet. It's on the wall, basically. Or if you're an attorney, you should know the basics. It's the basic ones, and it's right there to argue it. Was that just we have nothing else? Let's just throw this at the wall and waste some more time. I mean, what was the strategy there, if any?
You know, you especially in a homicide case where the sentence is life in prison without parole, you have to leave no stone unturned. You have to err on the side of objecting because the objection preserves the issue for appeal. And so there is sort of a legal reason to preserve issues for appeal, but not just like any nonsense issues. And I think that, you know, the attorney's lost credibility in doing that. And yeah, it was already kind of a train wreck, and they didn't do much to help.
There's still two Adelsons out there, unindicted co-conspirators, Wendy and Harvey. Obviously innocent, never been charged with anything. They maintain their innocence. A spectacle like this, what does that do to the DA? Who's sitting there that's evaluating their future options, who's already said, stay tuned.
Yeah, you know, you... there's kind of a sense that perhaps prosecutors should be completely dispassionate and almost like objective robots who are, sure, evaluating probable cause and whether there is adequate proof, that kind of thing. That's not what it's like, man. I've been a prosecutor. I've been in those offices. Human beings are human beings. And if there is someone who is sort of poking the bear, who's almost in a taunting and insulting fashion, railing against the side that could consider charges against him. And not only is it a horrible decision legally, but yeah, you got to understand that these folks are human. I've seen cases where the prosecutors are talking afterwards and they're saying, you know, see how this person is just clearly not taking this seriously at all. They need a reality check. What could that reality check be for Harvey?
I think we're about to find out.
Did he just put a big target on his head? That where he may have skated off into the villages with the Golden Girls and had lovely a new Blanche every night of the week, but now it may not turn out that way.
Tempting. Yeah, you know, I think that prosecutors have limited resources, especially with their time. They have so many cases. They have to decide which cases they're going to focus on. And perhaps the prosecutor was like, hey, we've got the Adelsons. We convicted, you know, 25 people on this case already, and was going to just let it go. But then when someone jabs at you and intentionally is trying to get under your skin, maybe there's a renewed motivation to continue focusing on that Adelson.
Yeah. I think there's more questions that need answering there. In your opinion, do you think, I mean, against Harvey, against when, do you think there's going to be more charges against someone in this going forward? Or are they going to close the door and say, we got enough?
If I had to predict it, I think charges against Wendy are a little more likely than charges against Harvey. I just think that there's more knowledge that has been established that Wendy currently had of the general scenario. You know, she said she knew It came out in evidence that she knew her brother was considering all options, including a hitman. This is the father of your children. I know you hate him, but you know, what actions did she take, if any? I'm not saying she did, but did she take any actions in furtherance of this thing, or in furtherance of a possible cover up, or trying to frame somebody else? All of those things are potential charges.
Is it a crime if she didn't? We know that she knew that her family or her brother was considering it by her own admission. Is that a crime if you don't do anything about learning that your brother is considering hiring a hitman to take out your ex-husband?
Feels like it.
Or could that be argued? I don't know if he's serious or not. He says a lot of things. I mean, how that could be the argument, but legally, how does that stack up?
Generally speaking, in my view, and different people have different views on this, in my view, simply acquiring information about criminal activity does not somehow mean you committed a crime. Yeah, there has to be some act in furtherance. There has to be some substantial step, some personal involvement that pertains to the information you acquire. And so without that second level, I think just having that information is not a crime. You know, there are some creative prosecutors who think that if you don't intervene, that somehow is grossly negligent and you had some causal link in what happened. And I disagree with that view, but some people see
it. It may not be murder, but is it something, I guess, would be the, you know, the question. Yeah,
potentially, you know, involuntary homicide or negligent homicide.
Is it worth it? Is it worth going after her for something that would not stack up to a murder conviction or conspiracy? I don't know. I mean,
where's it cross the line, though? You know, to talk poorly about your ex because he's a whatever, fill in the blank. You know, where does it cross the line between he's a slimy, lying, cheating, whatever, and I, you know, hope his testicles explode, you know? Where do you cross the line between what you, sorry, did that just get personal? Gosh, I mean, but where do you cross the line
between? It kind of naturally goes there.
Between, you know, I've said that, but, and if his testicles do explode, does that mean that I'm culpable for it?
I would say that it doesn't. I think there needs to be some affirmative action taken, some substantial steps, some act in furtherance, and simply just like, hating a guy or having possession of knowledge of criminal activity is probably not enough.
Okay.
You better damn well hope nobody's testicles explodes. Otherwise, this evidence is going to become discovery.
They're coming for us.
It's the other woman's problem, not mine. Yeah. I don't care. Yeah. Go for it, baby. You can have him, Lisa. Take him.
All right, that's going to wrap up this episode. Eric Faddis, as always, thank you for coming on and giving your legal expertise. I bet you never thought we'd be talking about exploding testicles this morning, but
didn't have that on my agenda today.
There's always room for more. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're downloading podcasts so you don't miss any of our coverage of this and the many cases we're covering for you here. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi to find all of that. Until next time, for Stacey, for Todd, for Eric, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by.
Grainger, for the ones who get it done.